You are listening to Eastside Radio Podcast.
89.7 FM, Eastside Radio.
That's some pretty beautiful music there. It's called Arrival of the Birds by the Cinematic Orchestra. And why did I pick that? Well, I'm not 100% sure, but as you're aware, we're privileged here on Monday Drive to have the opportunity to chat with our local Federal Member of Parliament from time to time, so that we're kept in touch firsthand with the machinations of the Canberra government process. So I'm very pleased to welcome to the studio again today the independent member for Wentworth, Allegra Spender. Allegra, welcome back to Monday Drive, and thanks for giving us some time.
Thanks, Alan. I thought you were going to say giving you insight into the Canberra bubble, so I thought you put that more generously than you might have.
Okay. I see you've been really busy even after Parliament has wound up for the year, and thank you for putting Monday Drive on the same footing as ABC Radio Sydney with your media appearances today.
Oh, look, this is really important to me. I love all the radio that I get to do, but I think the local accountability is super, super important.
Yeah, well, we think so too, and we also enjoy. You didn't give us a plug on ABC Radio Sydney, okay. But maybe next time.
Next time.
I looked through the pictures over the weekend of the Albanese wedding, and I didn't see you in any of them. Did your invitation go the same way as mine?
Yeah, possibly. As I said, I think there might have been a few people ahead of me on the invitation queue. So I'm very pleased for the Prime Minister. I think it's and Jodie Hayden. It looks like they had a beautiful day.
It does indeed. Given your background, do you approve of Toto's dress from the fashion point of view?
Well, we never dress dogs in my family, so it's hard to make that sort of commentary. But if you're going to dress a dog, I think it was all right.
I think they did very well indeed. Look, you've had some troublesome time in Canberra recently, which probably gives rise to a general discussion on social cohesion and the safety and protection of our elected representatives in Parliament. Where do we go as a society against a perceived rising far right-wing extremism in this country?
Look, I think this is something that concerns a lot of people around the community, around the country, and certainly the demonstration outside New South Wales Parliament a few weeks ago by the sort of neo-Nazi groups, I think was of real concern to people, and particularly their targeting of the Jewish community, and recognising that they have targeted many other communities as well.
Yes, indeed.
As in some of what they have said and done. So it is really worrying. And I guess I see a kind of two different angles on this. There's the stuff which is kind of the stuff of government and laws and policing. And I think there's certainly questions to be answered there in terms of how the New South Wales Police handled that and, you know, the laws. But there's actually the broader piece of it's actually the broader piece on community and why is this happening? And so I think they're both are important. And while I've focused a lot on things like hate speech and those kind of pieces, I think we also need to look at how do we as a community in a very diverse country as we are, what are the mechanisms that actually hold us together and allow us, you know, to bring our diversity and use it as a strength rather than something that is weaponized.
Yes, indeed. concentrating on the second part of what you said, do you actually have, or not do you, but what level of hope do you have that Australia really can successfully push back against it, against the hate? And
I think we can. I think we are, you know, I think we are the most successful multicultural, sort of deeply multicultural country in the world. So while we have troubles, I still think we are, we can do that. And I think probably we're better placed to do that than anywhere because of the diversity of the people that we come, that come from us. And I think how do we do that? One is actually, is an economic piece, which is basically, if in hard economic times, that's where you see further rise of the far right.
Yeah.
So it's actually, one part is actually how you manage the economy and prosperity. But the second piece is, what are the institutions that protect us? And I think it's actually the experience of people coming together and, you know, seeing each other as humans first, as opposed to labels. And so whenever we do citizenship ceremonies, what I always ask all the people from around the world who are coming to be Australian, I always say to them, please reach out and reach across you know, difference to understand other people better.
Mm.
And then I think we need to actively cultivate our ability to disagree well, because we, you know, we're a diverse country with diverse views. We will always have disagreement. It's actually how you prosecute that disagreement. That's what's going to keep us together.
Disagreement and conflict are inevitable in all forms of life. As you say, it's how you deal with them that is important.
Yeah. We're coming up to Christmas. I know a lot of people will be thinking about the disagreements around the Christmas table. Right, and I think it is. It's, you know, we, of course we're going to disagree, but it is about disagreeing well. And, you know, and it's about building. That's actually why I'm such a big supporter of local clubs and you know, groups. Because they often help build those, you know, those connections across different cultures and backgrounds that enable people to see each other as humans first, and then we need to work on that disagreement piece as well.
And talk about Christmas coming up. Did you notice the lights in the window here in the studio?
Yes, very, very pretty. I mean, I'm a big fan of Christmas decorations, I have to say. My kids are pestering me. We got the advent calendars out this morning, and my kids are very much pestering me for the tree.
Because you didn't have enough else to do. Look, you finished your last sitting day was last Friday,
yeah.
And one of the last achievements was the government was overhauling the Environment Protection Biodiversity Conservation Laws, EPBC. Now, as I understand it, and in simplistic terms, a new and national independent regulator was created, net environmental gains were required from developers, and the planning processes, as they relate to environmental issues, are subject to being sped up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you think this is worthy legislation,
mm-hmm.
or is it simply an attempt for Labor to cosy up on the Greens, given that the coalition mm-hmm. is in such a disarrayed state?
No, look, I think this is really worthy legislation. I have to say, people have raised with me enormous concerns about environmental protections because, you know, let's be honest, they haven't been working. We are the extinction capital of the world. And so I think that it's really worthy legislation that has been. It was very close to what was recommended by Graham Samuel, who was actually put forward by the coalition, actually, under Susan Ley as Environment Minister at the time, to do a review in terms of our broken environmental laws. And so, you know, I've been listening to environmental groups, but I've been listening actually to business groups and community. Everyone I've been talking to said we needed to fix these. And while I believe that these laws are imperfect, I think that these are a significant step forward in terms of protections, but also in terms of delivering quick yeses and quick noes, which is really important for business too.
Yeah. There was a power blackout in the House while the parliamentary debate was happening. Was that you?
No, it wasn't. Actually, I don't know what's been going on with the lights in power, but the lights in Parliament, there have been a couple of funny times, actually, in the last little while, where literally in the chamber you're sort of sitting in the slight twilight, when I've just been wondering who's fiddling with the light switches.
Okay. It's got nothing to do with the cost of electricity and the government's ability to pay it.
I don't think, not that I'm aware of.
It wasn't. Okay, then. Look, news headlines over the past month or so have focused on something called net zero.
Mm.
Now, does net zero actually even mean anything? And if it does, should we expect any reduction in our power bills and keeping the lights on in Parliament anytime soon?
So, yeah, there's been a lot of talk about net zero. And effectively, net zero is a recognition, is kind of the mechanism that the world is using and the countries of the world are trying to get around to be the sort of umbrella around climate action. Because so the idea of net zero is fundamentally that We know that emissions from fossil fuels and the like are causing global warming.
Right.
And ultimately, we will only stop the growth in global warming if we come to a point where we're not putting more of those emissions into the atmosphere. So that's net zero. We might put some in, but we have to take some out at the same time to get to basically zero. And now Australia has a commitment, like many other countries around the world, and I think it's over 90% of countries around the world are covered by net zero commitments. You know, this is a mechanism that the world is using to try and reduce carbon emissions. And it's really important for Australia because as a country, we are one of the countries most vulnerable to climate change. So it's in our interests for the world to be united around climate action.
Right, right. And you think we're making adequate progress at this stage?
Oh, look, I'd love to see us making more. But what I'm genuinely concerned about is, you know, the coalition really backtracking on this, because I think that's actually extremely destabilising. But one of the things that did come up last week in Parliament was a climate change authority update, also by the minister, in terms of our progress. And looks like we are on track to almost hit 43% reductions by 2030. That is a really good thing. There's more work to do to hit our 2035 targets. But, you know, that's what we're there for, is to bring those policies in.
Right, right. And when the Parliament starts up again, will you be using your stick again to clout people over the head to get on with it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is people in this community across the spectrum are saying they want to see climate action. And I think they want to see it done in an economically responsible way, as cheaply as possible, in a way that works with our businesses and our communities, but wants to see it done. And I think it's really important to know that also, you know, there are a number of, there's been a big debate saying out there, you know, particularly driven by the coalition, saying, oh, we can't achieve net zero and cheap power bills. That's actually not borne out by the evidence. The International Energy Agency actually released research the week before last, which said that, you know, the best approach to lowering power bills in the long term is actually pursuing net zero, because, you know, renewable energy, once you build it, it is there.
It's there.
You're not paying for, you know, that continual extraction of coal, that continual extraction of gas. So there are some upfront costs, but once you build it, it is there.
It's a balance sheet item, not a profit and loss item,
as
some people might understand. Okay. I'm speaking with Allegra Spender, who is the Federal Independent Member for Wentworth in the Federal Parliament. Allegra, I read something recently that said if you don't own your own home by now in this country, you never will. Mm. Is there any reason for young people to disbelieve that?
Mm-hmm. This is one of the worst, I think, you know, if I think of social problems that this country has, I think this is really the worst of it. And the unaffordability of housing goes to the heart of, you know, whether we are that country of the fair go or not.
Mm.
And I think this is, you know, and it's not just young people, it's, you know, older people who find themselves divorced, and others or who never got on the housing market and suddenly realise that they can't afford, you know, afford their rent, or, you know, don't see any prospect of owning their own home. Mm. So I think the piece that I would say to young people who are listening is to say, this shouldn't be the case, not in this country. And, you know, use your voice and use your political power to push for the changes that are needed at all levels of government, because this is a local, state and federal government issue.
Yeah.
And all need to take action. Some action is being taken, but we are all going to have to focus on this the whole time for the next 10 years if we're going to make any dent in it.
Yeah. So you believe that there may be some light at the end of the tunnel, but we just need to keep agitating?
I think we've got much further to go. We had a minister meeting with a housing minister last week in federal parliament. And again, I think there are some things that the government are doing which are positive in terms of, you know, their focus on supply, which is the major area. But I think that they need to be pulling more levers. And, you know, the levers I'm, you know, asked a question in Question Time last week and will continue to pursue is, you know, what can the federal government do? They can look at levers such as incentives for states to get the states to do the right thing, because states states control planning, and planning's what really counts.
Yes.
They can look at the tax system, and they can also look at things like migration, including both the migration of construction workers and the like, but also our broader settings. And so I don't think they're pulling all the levers yet as hard as they need to, and I'll keep on pushing on all of those.
I think it's interesting you mentioned the split there between federal and state jurisdictions, which leads conveniently to what I was going to talk about next. In Australia, Australians lost $34.8 billion in gambling last year. Now, gambling taxes are not a major source of revenue for the federal government, but a report recently cited something in the order of $9.4 billion in 2025 as direct revenue to the states collectively. Mm. Now, in that circumstance, what's in it for the federal government to even discuss gambling?
It's what the community wants. Let's be honest. I mean, I think what's in it is that gambling creates enormous social harm. Now, you're not going to eliminate that completely, and people want to bet, and, you know, that's up to people's individuals. But if we want to keep on recruiting our kids into gambling, particularly if we want to grow gambling and particularly sports gambling, well, let's just keep on the same trajectory because that's working a treat. And, you know, as one constituent said to me, they said, you know, my 7-year-old asked me what a same game multi is. You know, it's terrible. That's not, you know, people are betting on the sports rather than watching the sport. So I think that the federal government, you know, hasn't taken action. This is a great weakness, I think, of the Labor government, is that they haven't been willing to take the action that is actually what the community is asking for.
Yeah, but I think my point is, why should it not be the states who grapple with the issues? Why does the federal government need to stick its oar into the discussion?
It depends on the different types of gambling. So I think the federal government controls things like online sort of advertising laws. So this is the area that we're really pushing the federal government in, is things like online gambling ads. You know, the ads that you get if you're watching any free-to-air TV, and sometimes you're just bombarded by, or, you know, even catch-up TV as well. The states control things like the pokies and other areas. So this is, again, it is the great federation we have that you split these things out. But that's why myself and others are really focused on what are the federal government levers.
All right. Okay. Well, that is a fight that will happen again in 2026, I presume?
I think so, definitely.
I shouldn't say fight, should I? You don't fight in
No. Well, I try not to, but it's pressure.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what I think myself and others on the crossbench are saying, you know, if the Prime Minister gave the Labor, you know, his Labor backbenchers a conscience vote, it would pass. Because the truth is that people recognise that the community wants change here, but the federal government doesn't want to change.
Talking about fighting and so on, how do you view the standards of moral and intellectual competence of our elected politicians? Now, the context is, should voters who elect people to make rules for national order and governance and to represent this country on a world stage, should we have any expectation that histrionics, such as fancy dress or indeed abusive dress, in the House of Government, in the Houses of Parliament, drunken episodes in the streets of Canberra, or other such similar behaviours, should they be acceptable?
I think the community sense is no. And I think it feels like you're, you know, it's all the One Nation, you know, things that have been going on last week.
Quite incidental. I can point to a number of other areas of misbehaviour in politicians, but I think those are the ones that most people might relate to of late.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be honest, I also get a lot of feedback around things like question time and parliamentary behaviour, where people go, you know, our kids, I don't want my kids in their school room behave like that. In no other workplace in the country would it be acceptable to shout and mock each other, except perhaps, you know, sledging in the cricket field. But I think that and Parliament sometimes feels like a sports game as opposed to the place that we debate these. So I have a real issue with this, particularly in the chamber, because we now actually have a code of conduct for parliamentarians. It's that we, and the standard means that we have to behave in a way that is, I'm going to sort of treat people with dignity, courtesy, fairness and respect. And I argue, and I'm actually doing a survey now amongst our community, so please, you know, answer the survey. Do you think politicians do that? I don't think so. And I think that we need to step up our own behaviour.
Under that code of conduct that you mentioned, are there any enforcement?
No, there aren't. Well, no, there really are. I don't think they really are. There aren't strong enforcers. There are sort of different parliamentary committees and other things that can censure people in particular cases. But even those standards don't apply within the chamber themselves.
Right.
And so that is the point. It's like, well, that's what a lot of people see is the behaviour in the chamber. And that's where at least that standard could be enforced a bit further, I think, actually by the Speaker. And that's what I want to see.
Yeah, it all comes down to discipline. And talking of discipline, when you were at school, you trained in ballet and contemporary dance, didn't you?
I didn't, actually. I was useless.
Yeah, well, no, but you did have a go at it. What I was wondering was, are there any disciplines that you learned out of that which could be applied to your colleagues in the Houses of Parliament?
Well, so I wasn't a very successful ballet person, I have to say. I probably got more from other areas. But I think you're right that what you do learn, I think, through hobbies and sports in your youth is actually discipline, and it's that's what I, you know, why I want my kids to play team sports. It's why I, you know, all team activities, it's discipline and getting on with people, because that's, and actually appreciating what different people bring to each to a team. I think that is really important, and those are some of the things that I think are super important.
Yeah, the Parliament of today is probably one of the largest and most, has one of the largest and most active crossbenches. How do you see that shaping the way politics works day to day?
I think what's happened is that the crossbench has, you know, particularly with the opposition in disarray, the crossbench is, I think, serving two incredibly important functions. One is actually providing accountability to the government on the issues that matter, but which the coalition have abandoned. And say, for instance, climate action, the coalition's not interested in it anymore. So this is why the crossbench is providing real accountability on that, on things like gambling reform, but also things on things like sort of housing accountability or the economy. And then I think the second piece where the crossbench leads is by listening to the community and then challenging the government to take on the issues that the community is saying are really important, but which both major parties haven't wanted to touch. And, you know, I've been working a lot in tax reform. I think you know that. And that's because that really came out of the community saying we need some really strong economic reform that goes beyond the sort of short-termism to, you know, more fundamentally, how do we address the issues facing us of Australia and our country? And I think those are super important, I think, roles for the crossbench, and why I'm really proud to provide them.
Canberra is obviously a fairly tough place to work, certainly in the environment, the pace at which you do. Do you have a parliamentary bestie? do you? Is there someone that you when you're fed up, you just sit down and sort of... Have a whinge to? Or is the place too sterile for that sort of thing?
No, not at all, actually. I know I have a lot of people I care about in the Parliament, or across the range of parliamentarians. And you know, I've got housemates. So there are people I do who are Kate Chaney and Monique Ryan. So, you know, even when we disagree, we quite often disagree about things, but we will provide, I think, moral support to each other, you know, at the end of a long day. But also, you know, people who've gone through different and or similar things. You know, I've learned a lot from. I played basketball in Parliament, and that has given me a lot of fun and solace. So, and you just have people you have good relationships with. And certainly when I've had some tough times, you know, the messages you get from people who are your colleagues, who, again, you don't agree with on all things, those messages really make a big difference.
Do you ever wish you were back in the clothing and fashion trade?
No, I don't. I really love my job. I mean, I love fashion too, but... I'm no fashionista. I'm really the daughter of one rather than one myself. So I really love my job.
Okay. Do you have a sandwich press in your office in Canberra?
We used to. It's not working now. But Barnaby hasn't asked himself over for steaks and, you know...
Have you ever cooked a steak in a sandwich press?
No, I haven't, actually. I didn't. I thought I was, you know, impressed with the ingenuity. I may not have...
I can think of nothing worse. A squashed piece of steak.
It's interesting. My one of my team used to cook scrambled eggs on the sandwich press in Parliament. So people are very sort of flexible with the sandwich press.
Okay. Parliament doesn't resume now until February. What are you going to do in the meantime?
I'm going to, I think, 26 different school prize givings in the next 3 weeks. Now, just warning everybody out there, I can't be at the whole at each of those the whole time. Unfortunately, like for some of them, you know, the prize giving might go for an hour and a half, and I can only be there for half an hour. That's normally because there are three or four at the same time, and I'm trying to get out to as many schools as I possibly can. So that is that's what I'm going to be doing for the next 3 weeks, pretty much.
Well, I hope you have the opportunity to take a break from the rigors of Parliament.
Yeah, I will. But I also had one tip I wanted to give people.
Please
on. Just in terms of, I know a lot of people are worrying about their bills and everything at this time of year.
All right.
And something that I only just learned about the other day, and I think is such a good tip, is that your energy company is obliged to write to you on their bill every 3 to 4 months or at least once a year to say how much money you could save by switching plants.
Right.
And it's actually on your bill. And someone in the office, their sister looked at their bill. They live in Bondi for a 5-person home family. They could save over $400 on their bill. And it was actually written on their electricity bill. It said, if you switch plants, you could save up to $400. So I just want to say, if people are thinking about, you know, are feeling under pressure, that might be one area where they can save a little bit of money by just switching plans with their same provider.
And that's with the same provider. That's not to say there are better advantages by moving away either.
Exactly right. The ACCC thinks has estimated that 79% of Australian households could reduce energy bills by switching. So I'm saying this because I think people are under pressure at the moment, and I'm just thinking if you know, I'm trying to gather any tips I hear around and about, and share those with the community as well.
It seems to me that the lights are never out in Allegra Spender's mind. Here we are trying to say goodbye and have a nice holiday, and you're trying to give tips on how to save money.
I think it's important. It really is important. It is. I know people are having a tough time, and so, you know, this stuff really matters. I said I love my job. I can't help thinking about it a lot.
Yeah. All right then. Well, I do hope you get a bit of a time to relax and take it easy between now and February. And Merry Christmas to you and your wonderful staff.
Thank you.
And I look forward to chatting with you further during 2026.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
You have been listening to Eastside Radio Podcast. For selections of more enjoyable content like this, visit our website, eastsidefm.org, and click on Podcast.